You're listening to Architecture Masters.
We had a lecture at school one evening. I was at boarding school, and an art historian came and talked about buildings and paintings. And I thought, oh my God, I've never seen anything like that. And I just thought that they were so beautiful, you know, so I was responding just to the sort of aesthetic, really. So then I started saying, I want to be an architect. And I remember my friends being sort of, you know, they were saying sort of, God, that's so boring, you know. And I thought, we're different, because I thought that was completely fascinating.
Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture, with me, Owen Wainhouse.
My name is Patty Hopkins. I'm one of the founding partners of Hopkins Architects, which my husband Michael and I started in 1976. I was longing to leave school, as we all were, you know. I don't know if they are these days, but I was doing A-levels, and then I thought I'd like to leave, and I found the Architectural Association. If you took the exam, you didn't need A-levels, which is absolutely disgraceful, but this was, I think, 1960. So I passed the exam, and they took me. And so I left school halfway through A-levels, which is, I shouldn't have done. One should always sort of finish things off, and, you know. I was thrilled.
On the programme this week is the architect Patty Hopkins. Patty studied architecture at the Architectural Association, where she met her future husband, Michael Hopkins. After graduating from the AA, Patty ran her own practice, whilst Michael worked for a time in partnership with Norman Foster. But in 1976, the couple decided to start their own practice together, which went on to become the firm now known as Hopkins Architects. The practice has gone on to design hugely iconic buildings, such as the 2012 Olympic Velodrome, Lord's Cricket Ground, Glyndebourne Opera House, and Portcullis House, to name but a few. In 1994, Patty and Michael were jointly awarded the RIBA Royal Gold Medal for Architecture, the profession's highest personal award. Of their early work, their own multi-award-winning home in Hampstead, which they built for themselves in 1976, with its lightweight steel structure and glass facade, is an early example of the modern and high-tech style for which they would become known. Another of the practice's early work was Fleet Infant School in Hampshire. The practice was commissioned by Colin Stansfield Smith, then chief architect at Hampshire County Council. Stansfield Smith, Sir Colin as he would later become, was largely responsible for turning Hampshire into a beacon of exemplary design state schools. A few weeks before our interview, and quite by chance, Fleet Infant School was given a Grade 2 listing by Historic England. The school also happens to be where I first went to school, so this episode has more than a little personal interest for me. For this week's episode, Patty was kind enough to invite me into their iconic home in Hampstead, where they founded the practice and where the couple still live. So I thought, I guess listeners will be familiar with a lot of Hopkins' big superstar projects, the Olympic Velodrome, Glyndebourne Opera, Portcullis House, many others, I'm sure.
Yes.
But I thought we might start with something a bit closer to my heart, which was Fleet Infant School.
Yes.
Which you were the lead architect
on? Yes, I was, yes. And you were one of the first pupils.
Oh, wow, absolutely. And I think since we've tried to set up this interview, it's been listed now by English Heritage.
Yes.
But it was even now it looks a revolutionary school from the outside.
Yes. Remind me of the date. Was it
86,
yeah.
I think it was opened.
Yeah.
So it replaced a sort of Victorian school in Fleet.
Yes, I remember visiting that, and I remember that very well, the great headmistress who was moving her school from this little Victorian school, which you said was very cold, into this very open, lofty building that we had built for her, and she was very enthusiastic, which was marvellous.
And it was the, was it the first school you built?
Yes, it was the first school we built, first building for education. Right. We had a good friend, Colin Stansfield Smith, who was the chief architect at Hampshire. He was a very impressive, influential chap, very nice. And he basically, as far as I remember, just asked us whether we'd like to do a school in Hampshire. And he had this, you know, he was able to patronise the school programme. And we actually, the first school we designed had, because we were interested in it at the time, had a membrane roof covering it. Right. We were beginning to think about membranes because I don't know if you know the Schlumberger building. That's got a big membrane in the middle. So we were slightly pushing a membrane on. We thought it'd be rather nice, but that got turned down, probably quite rightly. Right. And then we built this slightly more traditional sort of barn-like roof, like a sort of long barn. The difference was it had a very nice sort of central top light. And we planned it very simply with the classrooms on the south side overlooking the site. Was rather an amazing site, sort of part of it cleared out of trees and part onto some sort of slightly marshy, slightly boggy land, which actually turned out to have special species on, so the children weren't allowed
to run
so we had to sort of, but there was lots of space around about, which you possibly remember.
I do, playing around there. And I remember what was somewhat revolutionary for a school, no doors on the classroom.
Yes, the classrooms were paired, but they came off this central rooflet corridor-like space, circulation space, but as you said, no doors. Each class area had a little enclosed, curved area, which was called the class base, as I remember. Yeah. And that was where the children went in and sat on the floor and had stories or quiet time, you know. Yeah. And, I mean, otherwise, there were partitions up to beam height, so it was enclosed but not roofed in. And so you actually had the feeling of being in this very nice lofty space. Mm. So the other side of the central circulation was the hall. These were actually enclosed. Yeah. And the administration, the sort of teaching areas, and then music
kind of
space.
Small library and music space.
Yes, and rather a nice entrance. I think the library was in the sort of entrance area originally, and sort of pet's corner and that sort of thing. But we went back fairly recently, and it was absolutely delightful, really nice, very well looked after, and no accretions, no horrible accretions, which you often get on schools. Quite a few huts in the trees, but that was
okay. Capacity and things, I guess, is there.
Yes.
And those, I mean, for a first education building, they're quite bold decisions about not putting doors on classrooms and giving, I suppose, changing the way teaching took place, actually. Where did those ideas?
Well, it's a good point. It's sort of slightly, I'm pretty sure there was someone in the Hampshire Education Department that was interested in more flexible teaching and sharing. Yeah. So two classes would share some
facilities.
Yeah, sometimes they'd be run together. And we sort of rather latched onto this because we liked flowing, the spatial concept. Yeah. And we did, it was supported by educational thinking.
And a lot of that coming from, I mean, a real enlightened client through Hampshire County Council at the time. And you knew Sir Colin
Stansfield Smith,
you knew him previously, or?
Yes, we must have done, through the RIBA or, not well, but we got to know him well, because he was, as I said, he was a great supporter. And I remember one, the first scheme was turned down, so we spent quite a long time getting there. Anyway, then it got built, and it seems to be living happily.
Absolutely.
Ever after. And it's not it's not an incredibly easy building to maintain. It's a steel frame. It's steel glazing, glazing system with some glass, some insulated panels, all of which needs looking after, and they jolly well have, actually.
They take care of it.
Yeah, they do. Mm.
And I can see, just for the listeners, we're now sat in another of your award-winning buildings where the practice started.
Yeah.
And I suppose we can see some of the influences across into the school from from here in terms of structure and in terms of. Did you want to say a bit about the, about where the practice started?
Yes, we were actually we bought the site and had started designing the house, and Michael was in partnership with Norman Foster and decided it was time to leave. So this house became the focus of our new house and our new practice space.
Right.
We had three young children, so it was all a bit chaotic. But but this house is very different to Fleet. It is a steel frame, but it's quite a it's a modest steel frame. It is on a 4 meter by 2 meter grid, on two levels, because the site basically had two levels. Mm. What's quite interesting, this site was part of the rather nice little Georgian house next door, which was owned by the architect Frederick Gibbard. Okay. So Freddie lived there, and on this level here where we're sitting was a studio onto the garden. Mm. It was one big garden. We've got a nice big garden. This is half of it. And then above he had a garage, and that was linked to his house. So, and by chance, the reason I'm going on, but both Michael and I had worked for him at different times. You know?
Right, okay.
So it was rather a nice sort of, he came to tea in the garden when we just finished. I think he liked it. Anyway, so we built this, we had very little money. We basically had spent all our money on the site.
Yeah.
Sold a house we were renting for a year while we built. And I was the main contractor. Michael was working at Foster's.
Yeah.
I wasn't a very good main contractor. There were sort of gaps in the program. It was quite interesting. Oh. So we ordered, you know, we had a sort of little groundwork team of two men digging holes for the foundations underneath the columns.
It must have been quite hard. I mean, it was a local contractor.
Well, they were not sure where we got them from. A Portuguese chap, very nice chap called Joseph, and an Irish digger, you know. Yeah. And they, between them, dug out the site practically without any... You know, practically just manually.
By hand,
exactly. Wow. So we did that. We did the foundations, the pits for the columns. And then meanwhile, the steel frame was being made on Canvey Island by a small metalwork contractor, you know, who was more used to doing gates.
Fabricated off-site.
Yes, it was.
Which is really interesting. I mean, coming back into...
Yes, exactly.
That idea of off-site construction now is really...
So that came on a lorry with a little crane, craned everything in. We've got nice photographs of them sort of fixing. They tack welded it together, and then they made it precisely, and then they welded properly. You know, it was, it is quite interesting, the simplicity of the house.
Yeah.
And then next thing that happened was this cladding came along, the side cladding and the floor and the roof. So they came along, cut to length, hopped in. As I said, it could have been very quick, but there were gaps in between.
Different timings.
Yes. And then the glazing came along.
Right.
Again, everything effectively, except for the groundworks, was prefabricated.
And double glazed from the outset?
No, single glazed, pretty chilly.
Yeah.
And it was rather an experimental system, and it warped a bit. It was very frameless.
Right.
So about 10 years ago, I... redid the glazing and I re-insulated the house to bring it up to sort of current standards, and it's made a lot of difference actually.
Right.
So I think these frame buildings need that every now and then.
Yeah, you know? New materials as they come through.
Exactly, but what's interesting, there's no plaster in this house. It's all the finishes are sort of self-finished or pre-finished, like the cladding, like the metal cladding. And we have very few walls.
Yeah.
We started off with blinds along the street elevation and the garden elevation, really to sort of, you know, because otherwise one was living in a goldfish bowl.
Yeah.
And then we used blinds internally to
separate.
Then after a bit, our children said, we've got to have walls. So we made three bedrooms for them down here.
Right.
But we made that with melamine-faced panels, not plaster. Right. So again, I mean, they could be taken down.
And flexible.
In fact, we've taken down the partition here after our children left home.
To create another office. And
just more space.
And I guess, I mean, that's coming back into fashion a bit more now, the ideas of sort of long life buildings with a kind of a loose fit that can be reshaped and remodeled. With different stages of living in your home.
Yes. I mean, if this had been concrete block internal walls, you could have done it, but it's a bit more difficult,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so it's worked really well. So the office, so we started the office upstairs. We lived down here.
Right.
And then we grew to about
eight. So
you were eight.
Originally the two of you and one
and
assistant.
And one assistant, yes, right. Paul.
Okay.
Don't know what's happened to him. And then we got quite a big job to do.
Okay.
And then it sort of, you know,
grew from that. Yeah.
Not, we've never sort of increased incredibly fast. No. It sort of happened sort of rather incrementally with work, and right. which has been rather happy really. Yeah. Not, you know, one hasn't had to sort of grow by
and then shrink home. And then
no, right. exactly.
And what sort of size is the practice now? I mean,
it's about 120 in London.
Right.
We have an office now in Dubai. Okay. Of I think they're 80 actually. So it's got wow. has got quite okay. big.
We'll come on to that maybe yeah. a little bit later on then, the kind of development okay. of the yeah. the practice. Yeah. I mean, just finally maybe on the house, it's a bold decision to live. I mean, where did the kind of inspiration for this was the concept of how you wanted to live your...
Well, we actually had, we bought with very little money when we were students, we had a timber-framed house in Suffolk.
Right.
Which okay. we used to go to for holidays when we okay. were students, and we were repairing that manually rather badly. and I think, interestingly, I think that was very influential, the timber frame of the farmhouse,
right. okay.
Which wasn't, again, was exposed inside but not outside. It was plastered outside.
Yeah.
And Michael was working at Foster Associates on steel buildings, so the steel frame
came from, right.
Yes, and that was an interesting exercise, you know, what steel could do compared with what timber could do, you know. I think if anything, I'd have liked a bit, there was a restrictive footprint. We couldn't right. go any further into the garden. Quite okay. have liked another bay.
Yeah.
At the moment it's 12 metres by 10 metres. Right. 12 by 12 would have been perfect.
Yeah. yeah.
And I'd like to have put another floor on.
Right. Yeah, at the time.
It's too late now. Yeah. Well, it isn't too late.
So you were born in Stoke.
Yes,
understand.
I was.
Parents who weren't themselves architects.
No, they were doctors.
Right.
But well, my father was an orthopaedic surgeon.
Okay.
And my mother was a GP.
Okay. So where did your interest? I mean, you've said in a few other places, science was your.
Yes, I really liked history actually.
Right.
I've said this before. I've certainly pushed into science, you know, because the school had a new science block. They had to fill.
Right.
You know, imagine they got money provided they produced
science block, and yes. so they need people to study. Okay.
Yeah. So, and which I could do, but I physics I liked, and maths. Although I peaked at maths a bit.
Right.
Chemistry, funnily enough, I just didn't kind of get.
Right, okay.
But I like physics because of and
physics
and
maths,
applied maths. Kind of, you know, yeah, I like that okay. because of. Anyway, I'd have liked to have done some other. You know how? Yeah. Of course, one can always.
Everyone
do
looks
it.
Back afterwards yes. and thinks, "Oh, if only."
Yes.
I
had an aunt who was an architect and a grandfather who was an architect on some different sides. So I sort of, although I didn't, aunt lived in South Africa, grandfather was dead, so I didn't really. No, you know,
didn't have a big influence.
No,
kind of
not a big influence. No, exactly. But we had a lecture at school one evening. I was at boarding school, very protected sort of environment,
right.
you know. And an art historian came and talked about buildings and paintings. And I thought, oh my God, I've never seen anything like that. You know, it was complete. I hadn't really, you know, my rather narrow. Education
right.
hadn't sort of
broadened
encompassed,
into,
yeah. And I just thought that was they were so beautiful, you know.
Right.
So I was responding just to the sort of aesthetic, really,
yeah.
you know,
the kind of artistic side of
yes,
the,
exactly.
Of the
you
building.
Know. So then I sort of started saying I want to be an architect. So
from,
I'd always
from that period,
literally,
right.
literally.
Okay.
Then it was a real sort of, and I remember my friends being sort of. You know, they were saying sort of, God, that's so boring, you know. And I thought there must be, we're different, because I thought that was completely fascinating.
Yes. Right. So that was in boarding school around the age of what sort of?
I was about 15 probably or something. I hadn't,
okay.
I don't think I'd take my O-levels then, but
okay.
I was about to, you know.
And that then influence was taking
well,
later studies into... into physics and
maths? Yes, no, well, I was obviously doing those.
Right.
No, well, I must have chosen those for A-levels, mustn't I? I don't think, I'm not exactly sure when that was, but I couldn't really change for doing, I started doing some art classes, but, and then I was longing to leave school, as we all were. You know, I don't know if they are these days, but
the boarding school was in Stoke as well,
was it? No, that was in High Wycombe.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So quite far from home. And those days, people, you sent people miles away. Yeah. Madness. I mean, it was good, a very good school, but it's, you know, it was pretty strict.
And, and all girls.
All girls, yes. I was quite sporty. I played sort of all the teams, you know.
Right.
Got bored of that, though. Yeah. But then I was doing A-levels, and then I thought I'd like to leave, and I found the Architectural Association. Right. If you took the exam, you didn't need A-levels, which is absolutely disgraceful.
But
this was, I think, 1960.
Right.
So
this was for an undergraduate degree at the
exactly, AA. Exactly. Okay. And I passed the exam. Right. I remember I came up to London one, I think it was Easter Halls, and passed the exam, and they took me. And so I left school. I hadn't done it halfway through A-levels, which is I shouldn't have done. One should always sort of finish things off, and, you know. Yeah. But I was thrilled.
Too good an opportunity to pass up.
Exactly.
And the AA at that time still, you know, had the reputation it does now.
It was, you know, I mean, we're talking 1960. Things were quite different.
Quite radical, kind of.
It was, yes. It was. I think. I mean, it still is really more suited to people with more experience. You know, right. I personally think it's more of a sort of postgraduate school. Really,
yeah,
it isn't, but it's more suited to it.
Okay,
and certainly then, so I find it jolly difficult actually.
Yeah.
You know, because I wasn't used to using that part of my brain.
So it was the first time. So you moved to London. Then
moved to London.
First time living away from school, away from.
Great fun.
Yeah, I can imagine.
that was part of the trouble. I came out for a year, worked for Frederick Gibberd.
Okay.
Went back. They thought it'd be good for me to
have a bit more practice.
Yes. Yeah. Went back, and then I got together with Michael, and then. Right. We married when
Michael
we were students at the Architectural Society.
During your master's, then during the...
During
the first degree, right, okay. Mm. And Michael was in the same...
He was in the year above. He'd been... he'd done architecture at Bournemouth Art and Architecture School, a sort of little school.
Okay.
And had left, come up to London to work, and then gone to the AA late, you know.
Right.
So quite a bit older than me, but he was only in the year above.
Right.
So we sort of got together, and I moved into his flat, and then the rest is history.
together ever after.
My mother decided it was time to get married.
Right. There was some pressure, family. Yeah. Right. And I mean, what's interesting then, after the AA, Michael went into practice with Norman Foster.
Yeah.
And you set up your own.
Well, I had a little practice at home with three children.
Right.
You know, quite small. Yeah. Which I really, really enjoyed. I did an exhibition for the hospital centre and things, you know, for a friend locally, that sort of thing, and for my parents, you know, nothing very grand. But it was a sort of half-time thing.
Yeah. You know? So you had in a sense, the experience of setting up the practice already, your own practice.
Yes,
And how have you then, so that obviously Hopkins Architects have grown, you know, considerably then?
I mean, I was, you know, particularly because of the way we started as a sort of the two of us, I've always, you know, sort of, well, in the early days, I sort of organised things, premises and, you know, all the sort of everything really.
Right.
You know, running
the whole office as well as.
Yes, I mean, I'm, you know, obviously with. We had when we first moved here, we had a very good practice secretary who was kind of invaluable, and she did books and things, which I'd been doing rather badly. and my role's always then obviously, with, you know, when we were here, the children were growing, but it was an incredibly useful situation.
Yeah.
Because they used to come home from school, I was up there.
Yeah. they can play came downstairs. Downstairs
and yes, exactly. Right. You know, I mean, they might have slightly different memories, but I thought it was very
it worked out very well.
Yes.
Am I right in thinking at least one of your children's gone on to be an architect?
Yes. Our middle daughter, Abigail.
Right.
Actually, she studied in America at Columbia.
Okay.
After a first degree here, she did history of art with Italian at Sussex, then said at the end of 4 years, I'm sorry, I think I want to be an architect.
Trying her best to get away from it.
And we suggested that she might think of America, because you can do architecture with a first degree of anything.
Right.
You can do a master's, which is what she did at Columbia, and she had a great time.
Right.
And then she worked for Richard Meier in America, in New York for a couple of years, and then came back, worked for us for a bit, sort of while she decided what she wanted to do, and met her now husband, Amir Sané, who was working for us and had worked for us as a student, you know.
Yeah.
And then, slightly sadly for us, they went off to form their own practice, which they run now.
Okay.
At sort of slightly like we started.
Okay.
You know.
That's interesting. We were just talking to Max Farrell.
Yes.
As the son of
Is he an architect?
Terry Farrell, who's an architect.
Okay.
I guess taking on some of the practice responsibilities.
Oh, is he working in the practice?
Farrell's and
So they're lucky.
It's an interesting way of, I suppose, whether people want to break away and have that experience of setting up their own their own firm. Or
it's quite unusual in my experience. Mm. I didn't know about Terry's son, but I've rarely known of architects. Children who've
taken on the family, business.
Because it's kind of an independent thing. You kind of want to do your own thing, you know.
And it's very, I mean, what I find so interesting is architects, in a sense, what separates the profession from people who have often worked in big practice or in practices for a while under another architect's name, and then have decided they want their own practice, and it's. It's often, I guess, for they've got their own creative ideas or their own types of projects they want to work on. But it's such a personal approach, I guess, architecture.
It's not strange that people want to set up. I mean, I always feel slightly that the better employees tend to go and do their own thing. You know, it's just kind of, you know, because they've got a stronger sense of what they want their design to be. You know,
for the practice now, six main directors kind of running the business sort of day to day.
Oh, no, they're really good. we're lucky to have kept them.
Yeah. And I suppose they've had the opportunity for some big projects. I mean, the Velodrome and the other.
Yes. We devolved, we expanded the partnership.
Right.
And they basically, it's their practice now. They run it.
Right.
We are.
How involved are you in sort of day to day then? Do you?
A bit, but not essential day to day.
Okay. So you can come in for the fun stuff and
yes we keep an eye on things, but we're not sadly it's not 40 years ago or
And interesting then about how, I mean, obviously a lot of the big names, there was the Brits Who Built the Modern World series a while ago with a lot of Richard Rodgers and Norman Foster and both you and Michael, people who've worked together and then
gone
on to do their own
thing.
Yeah. But also interesting as a husband and wife couple, you know, working together, and other practices often have complementary skills within their partnerships, where one practice director is very good at one particular thing.
Yeah.
How did you sort of split the?
Michael's definitely has always led on design. He has a very strong sense of what he thinks should be. Right. Frankly, there's always been so much to do. I've been happy.
Yeah,
you know, and I've been supported. I'm definitely. I've been more concerned with detail, and you know, I've been the sounds a bit boring actually, but I've been the reminder about the
important things. Big picture
But obviously, you know, he's worked very closely with our current partners some previous partners on the bigger jobs. You know, we've worked together on some things because it's kind of inevitable. But he's probably has. Certainly until fairly recently has been the sort of starter of all the main projects.
Right,
things like the school, school in Lymebourne, I'm trying to think of others now. I hope there were some. What else?
Well, so much that Portcullis House is the big...
Yes.
But a real kind of, in terms of the work, a real contrast between...
It was a change point, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot of very establishment. I mean, Glyndebourne doesn't, you know, in terms of British establishment and obviously Portcullis House. With that... high-tech
beginnings
and
yes, well, it's partially to do with initially one was sort of building out in the countryside. I know Glyndebourne's in the countryside, but it's kind of when you come into urban situations, things kind of change. You know, and a frame building needs to be freestanding, I mean, to make sense. So I think it's partially that the opportunities we had to build became more urban, and
right.
I mean, interestingly, the glamour was different, and we started off sort of thinking of a frame, and we, in talking to a very good acoustic engineer, Derek Sugden, you might have come across, who was the advice for Glyndebourne and lots of other things, and he said, you can have a frame, but you've got to fill in the gaps, you know. I mean, a sort of steel frame with cladding has effectively got air gaps in this, you know.
Right.
And that's those are sound gaps.
Yeah.
So he said you really want massive construction. And I think that was not the beginning, actually. Lords was the first, our first massive construction.
Yeah.
And that, in the massive construction at Glyndebourne, in order to make sure that the sound keeps in and keeps out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But then we got interested in using these massive, well, using bricks and stone and things, but in a, you know, trying to use them in a sort of interesting way, or in a way that used their inherent characteristics, you know, sort of properly or more thoughtfully than might have. And we went to America. We saw the Kahn brick buildings, which are rather great. Do you know Louis Kahn's brick? And that was influences quite a lot. Right. But I think the first time we used brickwork was on the Lords, the Mound Stand at Lords.
Okay. And there is kind of a series then of work done in the States, slightly more recently maybe.
Yes.
Is that due to visiting relatives and children
No,
in...
I didn't, really don't remember how the first... Must have been a competition.
Right, okay.
It was actually at Rice. No, the first one was in was Flagstaff,
in Arizona,
right. University of Arizona. That was the first, and I'm not actually sure how that came. And then we found that they're these sort of directors of building of the universities, and they obviously sort of all know each other, and they meet at conferences.
Right.
And we then got invited to Rice to do quite a nice lot of accommodation there.
Right, for some of the kind of university.
Yes, and then we went to Yale, built there, and we're now building at Harvard. So we've had a very nice run of, when everything went flat, that's when even these rich Ivy League universities in the States
weren't building.
They were sort of, you know, biding their time.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, interestingly, you know, a move from, with Yale and Harvard, a move from quite establishment buildings here to what is effectively the establishment in the States, really, that sort of trusted building. I mean,
The buildings we've done that, well, interestingly, Rice was a series of brick colleges. Mm. At Princeton, we did a School of Chemistry department, and that was more in a way back to the style, because it seemed more suitable for the campus and for the type of building.
Okay.
Really, the science laboratory. That was rather fun. That was a nice one. Yale is very Rice is very brick. You know, that was kind of what you had to do.
Right.
And I think that's probably why they wanted us. You know.
Right. And then, I say more recently, I mean, the kind of the big Olympic 2012 velodrome. I mean, interesting you talk about acoustics. I mean, one of the things people talk about, the acoustic excitement inside the velodrome.
It's fun, isn't it?
fun, yeah. I mean, really, I'm just kind of amazed, really, at the breadth of projects, sort of types of projects.
We've been lucky. I think we've actually been building during a very lucky period. Mm,
right.
You know, we avoided the sort of post-war people who taught us were sort of had been building, building up. I mean, I don't mean that it wouldn't have been good to do that, but it was a difficult time, you know, sort of immediately post-war. So we started building in the 60s.
I mean, you said, I think, somewhere else that you were being taught in the AA at the time by people who had come back from war. Mm. And there was something, I mean, I guess, of that real optimistic age, do you think?
Oh, yes. We thought architecture was going to change the world. And,
right.
You know, and that's what's sad about a lot of the denigration of the 60s buildings, because they might not have been built very well. They weren't there wasn't very much money, but they had these fantastic ideals. You know, you will know.
I think some of that's, I mean, certainly there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Neave Brown obviously winning
he was my tutor for
medal, right? Which you and Michael won the gold medal a few years ago.
And we went to Neave's gold medal presentation the other night, or the other month. It's very, very well deserved, actually.
Right. Yeah. And so he taught you, did he, for a while?
Yes, he was my tutor at the AA.
Right. Okay.
For a year. Because most tutors had a little practice, and then this was before he joined Camden. He was on his own.
Right. They taught and practiced.
Taught part-time, exactly. Right. Yes. So I have to say, and then he became a friend, because then we moved into his Winscombe Street houses he did. So we became good friends.
We were in Camden, next door.
That's Camden. That's a bottom of near Highgate Cemetery, below Highgate Cemetery. We were there together for about 8 years. So,
fascinating. And do you think, I mean, I kind of wonder whether some of that attention now to some of the 60s buildings is being rehabilitated maybe suddenly? There's more interest, do you think,
I think so. I mean, that particularly where you get these demolition fusses, you know, and buildings that are saved. It always hopefully saved. I think one recently hasn't been.
There's some talk in, certainly Robin Hood Gardens in East London, and a few buildings kind of.
But when they are, then people are sort of focusing on, you know, the good bits, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that was what was interesting about the thing I said before, the Gibbard visit, the Harlow visit, because that was a really hopeful new town, you know, and it's done pretty well.
And quite a lot, actually. I mean, that kind of influences of Suffolk and Essex have had on the on the practice. I mean, some early the Green King Brewery, and it's quite a
that was our first
formative part of the country for the practice, really. Yes, do you think in terms
of then we had this, we bought this ruin in Suffolk in early days.
Okay,
the timber frame building.
Yeah. Is there a kind of vernacular there, do you think, that allows you? I mean,
well, we're very keen on frames, and they are, there's a lot of frames, but you don't see them, interesting. They're plastered over, so they're quite subtle. I don't think so, really. I don't think one could quite say that.
No,
it's just kind of convenient.
And then we talked a little bit about you kind of winning work and luck on some of the projects. There's a limited number of practices of your esteem and reputation around the world. And given how closely you've worked with some of the other big name architects, does that kind of competition ever seem, you know, you're presumably at stages competing for work with the same people you've worked with previously?
Oh, we did a lot, yes. And it's interesting, you become more friendly sort of later on.
Right, when the pressure's less.
Less. I mean, you're always, you know, you're good colleagues. But no, you're absolutely right. You are always competing. We were always competing against our friends or acquaintances.
People you've worked really closely with.
And a lot of people who've worked for us have gone on to set up their own practices, successful practices.
Which must be
that's good.
Rewarding, to see the people. Yes. Yeah, people learn and
I kind of feel things were easier then. I feel that the buildings were more. They weren't so gigantic, but they were really interesting
on a different scale. Maybe
Different scale. Right. Owner occupiers.
Yeah,
a lot of our early buildings. We don't see them around now so much.
Which I suppose now
it's more developer-led,
more by investment. Kind of more commercial aspect to the building. Right, and then maybe a kind of interest. So the practice grew, you say, about 150 people now in...
It's about, say, 120
In London.
Yeah.
And where did the Middle East office open?
Well, that sort of, we were asked to a conference, an AR conference in the Middle East, in Dubai, or right. Abu Dhabi, I think, maybe. Yeah. And that sort of, we met someone there who asked Michael to go back and talk, you know, that sort of thing mm-hmm. happened. And then by chance, our daughter, who's married to a diplomat, was posted there.
Right, okay.
And then this chap we'd met wanted us to do some villas. It's sort yeah. of, you know, and it, because Sarah was going to be there, it sounded
yeah.
great idea because we right. could keep
backwards
in touch.
Backwards and forwards, you know. Yeah.
And then someone in the office was keen to work abroad,
right.
Simon Fraser,
yeah.
who basically set up the practice. Yeah. Sarah sort of helped him a bit, you know, right. find premises and that sort of thing. So it's sort of... It was again. It was really fun.
Yeah.
And then Dubai. So Dubai grew slowly, and then had this major boom, and you know, yeah. which sort of crashed in.
Right. Yeah.
And all these cranes sort of stopped, and then things have started up. You know, coming up again.
Right.
And we built very nice sort of mixed developments. Something called Gate Village, which was an attempt not to just build a big air-conditioned shopping centre, yeah. but to do sort of narrow streets that keep away from the sun and shade, you know,
right.
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Sort of slightly yeah. an attempt at
a local,
exactly,
responding
yeah.
to the local context.
Yes, and that's worked well. It's really nice.
Fantastic.
And we're doing a big, it's called the Dubai World Trade Centre site. We're doing a lot there. We've done a big
right.
tall. CPO8, it's called. I can't remember its real name. You know,
okay.
it's sort of seems to be going rather well.
Yeah,
yes.
Seems really.
And I mean, they're very. You know, there's sort of Simon, sort of the Sheikh wants to see him, and then he doesn't turn up, and it's
right.
it's complex
yeah.
actually
because and culturally quite complex.
Yes,
I imagine to
yes,
pick up.
Yes, but I mean, our daughter had really good sort of 4 years there. You know,
right.
with her swimming pool and the sailing club down the road.
Right.
It was quite
a nice lifestyle.
Stage, very
yeah.
nice lifestyle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, we're going actually next week to see, we go each year to sort of see the office.
Right, okay.
And
see some of the projects and
see the projects. Yeah, we're going with Simon, yeah.
Fantastic. That sounds and interesting. You talked a bit about some of the sort of fun for the practice.
Mm.
The practice has fluctuated in numbers and have
yeah.
gone down a little mm. bit, but never. Mm. On the precipice, never kind of big.
We've never had real worries, actually.
No.
Again, we've been incredibly lucky. Okay. We've always had, one stage, we were doing quite a lot of sort of fit-outs of space, which was quite a good sort of general earner for the
right.
for the office. You know, we've
less dependent on new
yes,
build, that
exactly.
way, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yes, that was at one stage, early stage.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a really good ride, actually.
Yeah.
You know, and it's continuing to be yeah. for our partners and us.
Are there any buildings you wish you'd had the opportunity? I mean, you've had such to build for the, you know, the House of Commons and mm. Olympic buildings and mm. you know, to see your buildings. You know,
we did a very nice concert hall done by one of our partners, Andy Barnett, for Cyprus.
Right.
And it would have been really nice to do that.
but that didn't.
That didn't happen.
Right.
I mean, lots of things didn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, what's interesting is how many competitions one used to go in for. I remember the year we got Glyndebourne.
Right.
We'd actually done about 10 competitions, and the 10th, which we hadn't got,
yeah.
the 10th was Glyndebourne. We didn't. We're beginning to feel a bit, you know, what's
yeah.
going wrong. And then we
and
got
then it
Glyndebourne.
Came off.
Yes,
yeah.
you know, so it's, I mean, they were going along with other work, you know.
Yeah. But still, you're
yes.
investing a lot into competitions.
And you invest a hell of a lot, yes.
Yeah.
We don't do that so much now. Things tend to come and we don't...
The reputation maybe precedes
yes.
you. And,
yes, yeah.
Okay. Mm. And then I suppose I was interested in other sort of influences, you know, now around London. And we talked a little bit about Neve Brown and some of the housing.
Yes.
But things
yes.
that you find for people listening to...
Yes.
To look at and to... I mean, what's interesting, we're talking about Fleet Infant School, which I know... has a lot of still people at weekends, architects coming up
really?
And looking and peering over the fences
does,
at weekends and things. And you must have that with the house
oh,
here.
The whole
you?
Time, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
people.
No, a lot of people, I mean, masses used to come and quite
right.
a lot come now.
Really,
sort of, right. Yes. So sometimes we used to see little groups in the garden.
with their notebooks yes. and taking
photographs. Were you saying what?
Well, I was interested then in people are obviously looking at your buildings for kind of influence, and people are, I know the kind of Velodrome and having, I mean, in terms of legacy, I think about Fleet Infant School and the impact that's had on me, the impact the Velodrome is having on cycling in this country now.
We've done a nice building in the Euston Road for the Wellcome Foundation, which is, I think rather a very successful urban building. That interestingly that really is a very busy road. Yes,
on that in the similar frame.
Yes, it is. Yes, I have to say a lot of we went to the city to some event the other night to St Stephen Walbrook Church, which looked absolutely beautiful inside. That's the one with the Henry Moore fountain in the middle.
Yeah,
and I couldn't recognise where I was.
No,
I find this massive construction a bit daunting now. It doesn't sort of.
The city is kind of must be unrecognisable for you.
It is. I've never, apart from Ten Trinity Square, which we did, which was a fit out of the Port of London Authority building, which we did very early on, end of Tower Bridge. So it's not really right in the city. Oh, we did the Charter House actually. That was a nice little project in the city.
Right.
We did a couple of buildings. Rebuilding bomb damage in the Charter House.
Interesting. I was talking to Eric Parry the other day about some of the work he's doing for Charter House.
Is he doing?
Well.
Is he doing work now?
So.
Yes.
There's no big tower that you've done.
We haven't.
In that city.
No, we've done it. The other place we've worked is Tokyo. We've done a big tower in Tokyo, a big sort of mixed use tower, Marunouchi.
Yeah.
And we're building now another sort of slightly similar development on near but not far away, on just facing Hibiya Park next to the Palace Gardens. That's nice. You know, that's been a good.
Is that the sort of direction you think that some of the newer directors are looking for?
I think they'd like to. Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. We've covered a huge amount there.
That's all right.
That's absolutely fantastic. And as I say, I mean, for me, a real honour. I mean, really, from my kind of early school days.
It's a very nice coincidence, actually.
Absolutely. And I say the influence, I mean, and I guess that fascination has come from how people live and how they work. And that must come down to early schooling and those influences. And I find myself really uncomfortable in buildings with small windows.
Really?
And as someone said the other day, well, the full height classrooms with full height windows. I mean, a real. So I suppose that's a nice, you know, in terms of the impact that buildings have on.
That was the you know, remember the membrane canopies outside?
Yeah. I don't know. Providing shade.
Yes. That was the first time we used membranes, actually, successfully on a building. I mean, that was left over from when I told you we were going to do a membrane roof over the whole thing.
That was the residue design idea. It was still there.
But they were. I don't know if they were totally successful in keeping sun out. I think they weren't bad.
Yeah, no, you know, absolutely. Yeah.
And they looked rather fun, didn't they? They gave it a sort of jolly.
And real, as I say, real kind of interest in how education. I suppose that's the we've talked on some of the other podcasts about the influence of politics and. Architecture. And I know a lot of architects built schools, amazing schools, through the Building Schools for the Future program.
Yes.
And the kind of.
I wish something like that would start up again, actually.
Right. I mean, I suppose I'm interested then in just finishing up that a lot of your kind of former colleagues and compatriots, you know, certainly Richard Rogers, Norman Foster, have got quite involved in politics, either through
particularly Richard.
And it's interesting, neither you nor Michael have maybe just too much time for the practice. And
we haven't. We obviously
was that through a decision or was that through a?
No, I think it's actually just it is time and obviously inclination. We're liberal people, but we're not political activists. We've kind of felt that our best way to spend our time is on our buildings rather than.
Yeah. And that has enough influence.
Which
in
has
itself.
An influence. Yeah. Yes.
Fantastic influence. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope that was all right.
You've been listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. On the programme this week was Patty Hopkins. You can find out more about Patty and her work at architecturemasters.org, from where you can also subscribe to the podcast and follow us on Twitter. You can send any comments, questions or suggestions by email to hello@architecturemasters.org. I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.